Are we ready? I think so. Good morning. How is everyone? Good? Bad? Other? Who went to the party last night? Who's still hungover? Who's still drunk? A couple people. Good morning, actually. My name is David Robinson. I'm a program manager on the SQL Azure team. And today we're going to talk about powering data on the web and beyond with SQL Azure. We're going to first go into a really quick recap of what SQL Azure is, just to make sure we level set and everybody in the room is up to speed. Then we're going to demo this really cool cloud data demo that we've been working on back at the office to really showcase the types of things you can go ahead and do when your data is up in the cloud. Then we're going to show you how you can use MVC3 with SQL Azure to build an application in seconds. Well, maybe not seconds, maybe minutes. And then we'll talk a little bit about OData. And then we'll talk how you can build truly geo-available web applications without writing any code. There'll be no code in that demo. So if everybody would just say a quick prayer with me that all my demos go successful, I think we'll have a fun session. So before we begin, who here is familiar with SQL Azure? A few. Who here is actually using it and has an application in production? Not as many, but still good. So for those of you that are not familiar with the Windows Azure platform, a few years ago, we actually introduced the Windows Azure platform, and it's Microsoft's cloud platform. It builds upon all the things that you already know from .NET and ASP.NET and SQL Server. And today we'll be talking about SQL Azure, which is the relational database on the Windows Azure platform. If you're familiar with SQL Server, you should already know how to program against SQL Azure. I'm just going to ask the paparazzi in the front to stop taking my picture so much. So SQL Azure has the relational database engine, and we've also recently came out with the reporting CTP and also a CTP of something called the Data Sync service. We'll actually use the Data Sync service in some of the demos later on in the session. So what exactly is SQL Azure? SQL Azure is SQL Server as a cloud service. It's fully redundant. Oops, go back. It's fully redundant, highly available, and fault-tolerant. When you go ahead and create a database, we actually create three copies of that database for you: a primary and two backup replicas. If something should happen to your primary database, a failover will automatically happen, and one of your backup replicas will be promoted to primary, and a new replica will be created for you. And all this happens behind the scenes. You don't have to worry about installing software, configuring hardware, racking machines. It's all handled automatically for you. Today, it's based upon the SQL Server 2008 R2 engine. But later on, when we go into some of the roadmap stuff, we'll learn about how we're evolving the service. All the same tools that you use for SQL Server, like Management Studio and Visual Studio, all these tools, they just continue to work. All you do is, instead of pointing at a local SQL instance, you point up to your SQL Azure instance up in the cloud. As of today, we have six globally located data centers, as noted on the map. And it's pretty awesome stuff, pretty awesome stuff. I've been on the team for about 4.5 years before, before it was anything. It was just a bunch of people trying to see how we can get SQL Server to run across hundreds of machines. And that project ended up being SQL Azure, and it's really cool, as you'll see during today's presentation. When we were going through some of the dry runs for my session, we started sitting and talking about how the relationship SQL Azure has had with Mix throughout the years. And the first time we came to Mix was Mix in 2008. And we introduced something called SQL Server Data Services. And what SQL Server Data Services was back then was it was an entity store, where you would basically store entities inside the database. But it wasn't a true relational model. We got a lot of feedback, and people said, "Hey, you know what? If you're the SQL Server group, why aren't you giving us a true relational database?" So then we took a step back, we did a bunch of work, and then at Mix09 we came back and we said, "Hey, we listened to what you guys were saying, and now we have SQL Data Services." So we renamed the product, and now it's a fully relational database in the cloud. A few months later, we launched the product at PDC, and then I came back at Mix last year, and we announced a whole bunch of new features. We announced a 50-gig database, PHP support, OData, spatial data types. And it's interesting, you know, as we, you know, as we progress, you know, and you know, the things that you're going to go ahead and see, how the, you know, the platform is just growing and growing and growing. And I'm looking forward to coming back next year to show you some of the things that I'm going to tell you that we're working on and actually show you those things in action. So before, let's go ahead and actually start and look at this cloud data demo that we've been working on. So here we are. So this is Fabricam, you know, one of the famous companies of the world. And what this application is for, it's for a service that somebody can go ahead and use if you need repairs to, let's say, one of your PCs. Maybe you need a backup. Maybe you need something installed. So what people are able to do is they're able to come to this website, and they're able to go ahead and create a service request. So let me go ahead and log in. Come on. There we go. And I'm going to log in as Gail. And let me go ahead and say log on. And it's going ahead and it's logging me in. This demo is actually running in our North Central U.S. data center, and it's still logging on. And inside the North Central data center, we have a SQL Azure instance, and we have this MVC application running within Windows Azure as a web role. And let me try one different thing. Let's kill that one, and let's try the backup one more time. Let's try logging in. I guess the demo gods might not be too happy with me today. Oh, we logged in, so perfect. So now if I want to go ahead and create a service request, let me click that button. And the first thing I'm going to have to do is go ahead and enter my zip code. So let me go ahead and do that, 98052. And let me click validate. So what's going to happen now is that as I click validate, it's going to go out to Windows Azure Data Market. It's going to take my zip code. It's going to do a lookup to figure out, you know, what is the city and state associated with that zip code. As you start to think about cloud data, having data up in the cloud really starts to, you know, open up all these brand new scenarios. You know, everybody, I'm sure everybody in this room has some application that has a zip code table, and a zip code table that they have to worry about maintaining, making sure it's up to date. So why do we have to take on that additional work of keeping things up to date where, you know, we have these data sources available to us in the cloud to make these things, you know, so we don't have to worry about them. If I go ahead and click Next, I'm going to have to go ahead and pick what service I want to be performed for me. So let's say I'm in Vegas. I've been doing some naughty stuff, so I've got to do some antivirus work. Let me go ahead and click Next. Let me go ahead and say, when do I want this to happen? Let's say today. Let's say right after my booth duty is done. Let me go ahead and click Next. Let's put an address. Let me go ahead and say complete. And perfect. It's just gone ahead and created a new service request. So via OData, it's gone ahead and written this data back to SQL Azure. So what else can I do here? Let me go ahead and click close. Everybody, who's using Windows Phone 7 devices in the room? Come on, we've got to get a few more. Put your hand down, Microsoft people. So one of the things we could do now that we have this data located up in the cloud and we have an OData head sitting on top of it, we can go ahead and we can consume this data via a Windows Phone 7 app. So let's go ahead and take a look at what that might look like. And let me go ahead and just run this. So this is an app, you know, one of the techs in the field might be, you know, having in their pocket. And so that way I can go ahead and assign the service request to somebody and have them go and say, go ahead, this is your next job. So let me log in as Ken. Ken is one of our technicians. And Ken is being logged in. If you're wondering why this is slow because I'm actually running against on my machine, first of all. I'm using an internet connection at a conference, which typically they suck. And I'm also accessing data, you know, located out in our Chicago data center. So let's try this one more time. Let's kill that. Yeah, shut up. One more time. It's thinking. There we go. Perfect. So now what it's going to do is it's going to display all the different requests that's been assigned to me. So let's say I want to go ahead and do request 5039. Looks like a backup. It's in Lincoln Heights, California. So one of the things I can do now that I'm, you know, my data's up in the cloud and I have this, you know, I have, you know, map and geospatial data saved inside my SQL Azure database, I can actually go ahead and say map the home address. So now what this is going to do is this is going to go ahead and take that the address and the spatial data, you know, tied to it, and it's going to go ahead and pass that over to Bing Maps and actually show me where this service request is and give me, you know, directions to, you know, how do I go ahead and get there. So if I go ahead and click back, the typical workflow would be I arrive on site. Hopefully they let me in. I'm not too freaky looking. And I go ahead and I start the service. And then I would, you know, finish up and say it was completed. And you know, that's the workflow. And then ultimately I can go back to the website. Let's kill that. And I can go ahead and I can run some reports as well. We now have SQL Azure reporting services available to us. So now I can go ahead and take that data that, you know, I've been saving inside this database, and I can generate these rich reports over the data. And these reports, you know, run from within the Windows Azure platform. And as I can see here, I can see all the different ratings that people have given to the different technicians. So now having all this data up in the cloud, it really gives me the ability to not only, you know, create more new interesting types of applications, you know, but I now have this global reach. You know, think about that for a second. You know, think about how we have all these data centers located throughout the globe. If I want to enter a market, I don't need to worry about, you know, going, you know, finding a hoster or you know, finding a data center where I can plant some boxes in. I can just go ahead and very quickly say, okay, Windows Azure, you know, you have this rich infrastructure for me. Go ahead and deploy to Southeast Asia. Go ahead and deploy to Europe. And what we'll learn about in a little while from now is how I can actually have these applications be fully geo-distributed without really writing any code. So let's get out of this demo for a second. It was kind of okay. It didn't blow up too much. And let's go back to the slides for a moment. So now let's transition a little bit and start talking about ASP.NET MVC3. Who's familiar with MVC3? It's pretty cool stuff, right? It's, you know, writing applications has never been easier. Literally. You can write an application in, you know, in seconds. Really, really cool. ASP.NET 3 introduced the new RazorView engine. For those of you that are familiar with writing classic ASP back in the late 90s, it's like being home again. It's really, really cool stuff. Support for global action filters, jQuery, which we'll use in a little while, ViewBand property for dynamic access to view data, and just really, 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 really great, you know, project system. So let's actually go ahead and jump into the next demo, which will be how we can go ahead and use MVC3, the entity framework, and SQL Azure to create a pretty cool application, you know, in a matter of moments. So let's go out to Visual Studio, and let's go ahead and say new project, and I'm going to go ahead and say ASP.NET 3 web application. I'm going to go ahead and click OK. Microsoft's network access is yelling at me because I'm not on a secure network. Let me go ahead and click Internet application, and I'm going to go ahead and leave the view engine to be Razor, and I'm going to go ahead and click OK. It's going to go ahead and create this stubbed out application for me. And I can actually go ahead and run this now. And it's probably the best looking app you've ever seen before. Let's make sure it runs. And there we go. So it gives me all the scaffolding and base application architecture for me to go ahead and start building on. So the first thing I'm going to want to do is I'm going to want to add some references to the entity framework. So let me go ahead and just right click on references and say add reference. And go to recent, and let me add the entity framework and system.data.entity. Note that I'm using entity framework 4.1, the soon-to-be-released version of it. This is available for download, so you guys can go ahead and do applications like this for yourselves. Let me go ahead and click OK. So since I'm using MVC, I have to do three things. I have to build a model, I have to build a view, and I have to build a controller, hence MVC, I don't mean to be Captain Obvious, but just pointing it out. So the first thing I'm going to go ahead and do is create a model. So let me right-click and say add a new class. And let's call this my casino model. One of the demos that you'll see later on is for an application. It's a hot or not application. You're all familiar with hot or not, But this is for gaming tables inside of a casino. So you can walk up and you can say, oh, this table's hot. I'm making a lot of money on this table. So that way you can build a community and you can let everybody else know, that this table is hot. So you can go ahead and, maybe sit down and try to win yourself. I don't know how realistic of a scenario that is. If you're sitting at a hot table, I don't know if you really want to go ahead and tell other people. But, as we go from event to event to event, we always try to, create demos that sort of are related to where we are. And, there's a bunch of things that, Las Vegas is known for. And if I did a demo with some of the other things, I might have gotten fired. So I'll stick with the casino to start with. So now that I have that, let me go ahead and actually add some code. I have some snippets here. There, and let me go ahead and take these classes and go back here. So what this is called when you develop against using Industry Framework, there's a bunch of different ways to approach it. There's a code first approach, and there's a model first or database first approach. So what I'm doing is I'm actually using the code first approach, and so I'm actually defining the classes which will hold the data that I'm going to store inside my database. So the next thing I'm going to do is add a controller. So let me go ahead and say, actually, let me just build this quick. Oops, sorry about that. Let me go ahead and build that quick. Perfect. So now let me go ahead and add my controller. I'm going to say add controller. I'm going to call that my casino controller. And notice there's a checkbox here to add stub methods for all the different actions that I want to go ahead and perform in my application. So it's going to ahead and stub out the create, the update, the delete, and the details for me. So now that I have my controller, now I can go ahead and start to work with my data. And before I can do that, I have to add something called a DB context. So let me go ahead and go back to my models and say add another class. And I'm going to call this class DB context. I'm going to go ahead and click add and grab another snippet for that. Excuse me while I type. Let me just go ahead and resolve that. Perfect. Why is that not? Why is that not working? Hello. That's DB context. Oh, hold on. Let me do. That's better. There we go. So now I have a DB context. What the DB context is it's something built into EF to do a lot of the heavy lifting for me. I'm not going to have to worry about going out and creating a database or doing anything, that a typical application developer would do when they're writing an application that consumes data from a database. Now that I have my DB context, let me go back to my controller and let me look at my index method. So what the index method is when somebody goes ahead and shows up at the site, it'll go ahead and use this method to go ahead and show my view. So let me go back to my code snippets and just copy that out. Paste that in there. And resolve that. So now what's going to happen is when I go ahead and view this web page, it's going to go ahead and use this DB context, and it's going to return me a view of my database. It's going to say database.casino.toList. It's going to return me a list of all the casinos I have inside my application. So if I go ahead, then the next thing I have to do is I have to create a view. So if I go ahead and right-click and say Add View, and I say Create a Strongly Typed View, and I choose my model, which is casino, and I say Scaffold Type of List, it's going to go ahead and build me, you know, a web page using the Razor syntax and fill out all this information automatically for me. So let me go ahead and click Add. And I'm going to run this. This is going to fail. Well, hold on. Let's do this. This is going to fail. The reason this is going to fail is that by default, when I'm using an entity framework, it expects me to have a local copy of SQL Express running. Locally on my machine, I'm actually using SQL Server Developer Edition. You have to actually physically tell it that you don't want to use the default SQL Express instance. But in my case, since we're actually up in the cloud, let me go ahead and point to one of my cloud databases. And so there's the exception I was expecting. And one of the things to keep in mind, and this is something to look at, is that it returns to you this error message saying the provider did not return, this thing. What good is that? But if you look at the inner exception, you can actually see that it can't connect to the SQL Server instance. So in order to get around that, let me go ahead and close out of here and stop my app and go out to my web config and add a line for my database. And so I'm saying, here's my context, Casino DB context, here's my data source, and like we talked about, this is a server sitting up on the web. This is a SQL address server. I didn't have to go ahead, nor am I going to have to go and do anything as far as racking servers or installing anything. It's automatically there for me. So let me go ahead and say CasinoDB3. There's my username. There's my password. So now if I go ahead and run this and flip over to casinos and run that, it's just what just happened is without writing any code, well, I wrote some code, without writing any database code, creating a database or doing anything, it just went ahead and automatically created that database for me. So let me go ahead, what am I looking at here? HB. So let me go ahead and use SQL Server Management Studio. HB, let me connect. So it just created that Casino DB3 for me automatically. I didn't have to go ahead and design any of these tables. It just took the model that I created in that class and created the database for me automatically. That's pretty cool stuff. So let me go ahead and close this and actually make this application do something. So let's go back to the controller. And so we have the index method. Let's actually look at the create method. And I have a snippet for that as well. And then let's look at that. So let's paste this in here and talk about what it's going to go ahead and do. Paste, and let's make that a casino. New casino. Done. So now what it's going to do is when when somebody goes ahead and does a create, it'll go ahead and once again use that database context, and it'll add the passed in casino to the add method and save the changes to the database. Now, in order to get the actual screen that will fill out that will present me with the fields that I need to go ahead and fill out, I have to add another view. So let me go ahead and do that. Let me right-click and say Add View. And it automatically fills out because it knows I'm in the create method. Let me leave it on strongly typed. But this time, let me go ahead and choose the scaffold of create. And go ahead and click Add. And it's gone ahead and added that page for me. So now if I go ahead and run this application and switch over to my casino, and I go ahead and click Create New, it's asking me what do you want to name the casino, and so let me just go ahead and name this Mandalay Bay, and go ahead and create. It just went ahead, so now if I go back to the database, and I do a select on this, and run that, we can see it just went ahead and added that record to the database. So without running any T-SQL, without designing any databases, by just starting with a class inside my application, I've now used the combination of Entity Framework and ASP.NET MVC 3 to go ahead and create this application. The Contoso app that we saw a little while ago, that was all written using some of the same technology here. It's pure MVC 3. You know, and one of the things to keep in mind is that as you develop applications, it's really simple, dead easy to use MVC 3 to create these apps. So let's back out of here and go back to the PowerPoint. So some things to remember. Everything that we just showed was using Entity Framework 4.1, which should hopefully be out pretty soon. For when you're using SQL Azure, explicitly define your connection string, and if you're not using SQL Express, you have to do the same. The MVC3 templates are not a part of the Windows Azure projects as of yet. For those of you that have developed cloud applications, some of the cloud tools will give you these predefined templates you can use. The best way to get around that in the short term until we update that is to start with an MVC3 project first, then add your web role. And the other thing to keep in mind is all the DLLs that we added references to earlier, make sure that within the Windows Azure worker role, you say to copy local equals true, so that way it copies it, the DLL, because they're not there by default. Another best practice is to make sure that you store your database configuration in your CS config file and not your web config file, as I did. The web config file gets compiled into the package that you deploy to Windows Azure, and just in case you want to make some database changes, or repoint it to someplace. Another thing to keep in mind is that the out-of-the-box ASP.NET providers for SQL Server do not work with SQL Azure. There's an updated set of providers that you can use. If you go out to the SQL Azure team blog, which is referenced at the back of the deck, you can actually see those providers. The other thing to keep in mind is with the code-first approach, it does not create stored procedures for you. All it does is use the basic CRUD operations, insert, update, and delete. If you have an application that has some intense business logic, you might want to think about putting that business logic into an actual stored procedure and use a model-based approach. In a couple seconds, we'll actually go ahead and do that model-based approach first inside the demo and show you how you can actually call stored procedures. So we're here talking about data, and we're talking about how you can extend the reach of data. One of the things that's become common on the web, up until about a couple of years ago, the web was a collection of web pages. You went to Bing or Google, you did a search and you got a web page. But now the web is being transformed. The web is no longer just a collection of web pages, but it's now a collection of web data services. There's data services available from everybody for you to consume. Everybody from Netflix to Facebook. It's all out there for you to go ahead and use inside your applications. Windows Azure Data Market has so many rich data sets available to you for you to use inside your applications as well. And the thing that makes all this possible is OData. OData is our open data protocol. It's built upon and uses the same constructs as AtomPub. And it really enables you to go ahead and take your data and expose it to a wide variety of platforms and devices. You got to keep in mind there's no SQL clients on the iPhone. There's no SQL clients, you know, on Windows Phone 7. If you want to go ahead and have these applications consume this data, you need an open web-based way of going ahead and providing people access to that data. Great thing about OData is that it really powers the web and Ajax experiences. We can use things like jQuery and JSON to go ahead and consume it. There are Windows Phone 7 OData libraries available. And like I said before, if you want to really extend your reach off the Microsoft platform, OData is really the way to go ahead and do that. And so how can you go ahead and expose your SQL Azure database as an OData feed? So let's go ahead and see what that looks like. Let's go back to Visual Studio. Let me say new project. I'm going to do another MVC3 application. I'm going to go ahead and click OK. Let's go ahead and say OK. So unlike before, when I started first with some code and I wrote some classes that I wanted to go ahead and store my data in, now I'm going to actually start with the database first. So to do that, I'm going to actually right-click. I'm going to go ahead and say Add. And this time, I'm going to click on Data, and I'm going to click on ADO.NET Entity Data Model. I'm going to go ahead and click Add. And I'm going to say Generate from Database. And this time, I'm going to choose a different server. I'm going to go ahead and say, yes, I've already gone ahead and added these to my Visual Studio. I'm going to go ahead and click Next. It's going to go ahead and read my database information. This database is located in South Central U.S. I'm going to go ahead and say, yes, I want access to all my tables. I'm going to go ahead and click Finish. And it's just gone ahead, it's looked at the database, it's pulled it into my project. The next thing I need to do is just right-click and say Add. I'm going to go back to Web. I'm going to scroll down, and I'm going to say WCF Data Service. I'm going to go ahead and click Add. And I said, 1.5 lines of code, so here's the half a line of code. So I just have to tell it that this data service is of type EventureWorks Entities. And then here's the one line of code. I have to go ahead and say what actions or what kind of access do I want people to have to my database. And so I just go config.set, set service operation access, open up, and I want access to customers. And I want a service access operation rights. Dot all. So let's do this. So let's go ahead and right click on this and say view in browser and see what happens. One more time. That's interesting. Come on. Yeah, the rights are fine. So let's just do this. Let's open MVC application 9. And view this one. There we go. So if the original demo had worked, you would have seen this initially. But now what's gone ahead is that I've gone ahead and exposed my AdventureWorks database as an OData feed. So I can just simply go ahead now and access this over, you know, over web protocols. So if I do customers, it's going to go ahead and query my database and pull back a list of all my customers. So now that I have this, I can go ahead and take my iPhone app or take my Java app or take my Windows Phone 7 app, and I can access my SQL Azure database over the web without having to worry about, you know, where my SQL client is. Let's go back to the slides for one more second. Actually, I didn't show you the jQuery part. Let's pull that part up. So now that I have access to that, I can write some very, very simple jQuery to say, you know, go ahead and pull back all my customers, iterate over all of them, and display the results. So if I go ahead and run this app, this is actually OData, which is a RESTful implementation. Yes. So now if I go ahead and click my load some data button, it's going to perform that jQuery and pull back all the customers in my database and present it to me on my screen. So literally, with only writing, you know, a couple lines of code, I now have access anywhere in the world over RESTful protocols via OData to my SQL Azure database. All right, very good. So we started out with having to write a whole bunch of code. We then moved over to WCF Data Services and OData, and we wrote two lines of code to go ahead and be able to access our data. We're now at the point where, you know, we're going to stop writing code and we're just going to start to do some configuration stuff. One of the things to keep in mind with the Windows Azure platform is that the world is at your fingertips. You know, you now have the reach to be able to get to markets that you never have been able to before. At the same time, you know, you also have the ability to increase your application's performance. And so what does that mean? That means that if I have an application that I'm hosting here in the United States, a user over in Europe, they would have to traverse the internet and go over a whole bunch of different lines in order to access my application. One of the things we can do is I think we can do that a little bit better. But why does performance matter? Once again, if I have this application loaded here, you can think about people that live within that circle are going to get about a 50 millisecond, you know, time for each page to be served up. But as I move further and further out, the latency and the distance the application has to travel, you know, it gets increased. So one of the things to think about is why does performance matter? You know, we want to have, you know, responsive applications. We want to have fast page load time. You know, and with fast interactions, we really have a, you know, higher level of interactivity, and we can really start to bring out new types of applications. And so for those of you that were watching some of the keynotes, we announced something called Traffic Manager for Windows Azure. And what Traffic Manager does is it enables you to go ahead and have multiple instances of these web applications running, and it will route your customer to the one that's closest to them. So let's take Traffic Manager, put that aside for one moment, and let's think about, okay, if we go ahead and we deploy this web application and we deploy it to all six Windows Azure data centers, we're still going to have a performance problem. The reason is that if we only have a single SQL Azure database located, let's say, in North Central U.S., and we have lots of these web applications all throughout the globe accessing that single database, we're still going to have the performance hit because every time somebody performs a query or does, you know, an insert or an update to some data in that database, now instead of having your customer go ahead and see that latency, the actual web application itself will see that latency. So I think one of the things we're going to do here is we're going to solve that with SQL Azure Data Sync. SQL Azure Data Sync enables you to synchronize different types of different databases. Those databases can be within the cloud, so you can go cloud-to-cloud synchronization, or you can go from on-premise SQL Server to cloud. There's no code required for this. So like I said, we're not going to be writing any more code. All you have to do is go to this web portal, which we'll see in a couple minutes, and actually just go ahead and set up a sync relationship. All you have to do is put in your credentials for your SQL Azure database and say, I want to sync this database to this database. It provides you the ability for two-way sync as well as one-way sync. Excuse me. And it also has conflict handling and resolution, logging, also the service scales. So today, there's actually two CTPs available for the DataSync service. CTP 1 is publicly available. CTP 2 is a private invitation-only CTP. We will be coming out with later this summer an additional CTP, that would be CTP 3, at which point it'll be feature complete as we get ready to launch the service. So let's look at how we can go ahead and build this application. So what I've gone ahead and done, let's find the right one, is over here, I'm actually inside the portal for SQL Azure DataSync CTP 2. And I've gone ahead and I've created something called a sync group for my mixed demo. And if I go ahead and edit that, I can actually see that I have two different databases within the sync group. One located, this HB one is located in Northern Europe, and this one's located in South Central US. And I want to go ahead and do a bi-directional sync. If I look at the databases, I can see the two different databases here. And if I wanted to, see this agents tab? If I wanted to, you know, include an on-premise SQL Server in the sync relationship as well, I would be able to simply go ahead and download this agent and configure this on-premise SQL Server to participate in the synchronization. So now sync in this scenario, DataSync is going to keep my two casino DBs, it's going to keep the two of them in sync. So if I do an insert in one database, it's going to move that over to the other, and vice versa. If I go back here and log into the Windows Azure portal, and let's take a look at how I have this configured over here. Let me log in. One more second. Sign in. It's logging me in. Hey, that's better. That was actually a security measure. I didn't want you to see me log in. So if I go out and look at my hosted services, let this load up. You can see I have two different deployments of this hot or not application. One's located in North Central US. The other one's located in Southeast Asia. So these are two independently configured web roles. One is pointing to a database located in North Central. The other one is pointing at a database located in Southeast Asia. If I come down here to Virtual Network and let this load, and I go to Traffic Manager and let that load, I could see how I have this configured. Now let's take a look here. So I've called this, this is my Mix11 demo, and I have two DNS names located inside this, the Hot or Not North Central and the Hot or Not Southeast Asia. So now what's going to happen is when an application comes comes into Traffic Manager is going to go ahead and look at this application and look at where this person is coming from, and it's going to route them to the data center that's closest to them. That's if I have the performance. I could also choose to have a, set it up for, from a failover mode and also from a round-robin mode. You would want to use the round-robin mode if you have, let's say you have an application that you know is under you know significant load, and perhaps what you want to go ahead and do is you want to have you know maybe 5 or 10 instances of it located in the same data center and just you know round-robin back and forth. Cancel that. About there. So this is a diagram of basically what we've set up is that traffic manager, depending on where they're going to, will route the person to the specific application, and we have data sync service synchronizing all the data back and forth from the database perspective. So what are the things of feedback we constantly get from people? And this is to our team and Microsoft in general, is we need to be more transparent. And that's something that you know we're trying really hard to do. One of our concerns, and well, it's not my concern, but it's other people, is that you know anytime we go ahead and say, you know, here's our roadmap, you will have this on this date, you know, if we slip, you know, we get the feedback, oh, I was expecting this on this date, you know, what's going on? So what I'm going to actually share with you now is some of the areas of investment that we're making in this calendar year, and just to describe to you, you know, where we're taking the platform. And like I said, you know, earlier, you know, hopefully, you know, not hopefully, but definitely, at Mix next year, I'll actually be able to show you, you know, how we're making progress and actually demo some of these features for you. So from a managed service perspective, one of the key pieces of feedback that we hear time and time and time again is that, you know, when am I going to get back and restore? When am I going to have the ability to take my SQL Azure database and restore it to a specific point in time? For lots of people, that is a non-starter, and that's one of the things that we're actively working on, and you'll you know have hopefully relatively soon. I can't commit to any dates, but you know you guys will be pleasantly surprised on the coming months as far as from a point in time recovery standpoint. The other thing that we're working on is a new database import-export facility. We just launched a CTP of that a couple weeks ago on SQL Azure Labs. And what this gives you the ability to do is to take an on-premise database, on-premise SQL Server database, export it to this new file format, and then go ahead and take that and import it to the cloud. So it's a two-step process. It's all you got to, you know, export and then import. It's no longer do we have to worry about these wizards and this process of creating all these BCP scripts and create scripts and whatnot. So it does all that automatically for you. In addition, we're continuing to make enhancements to the Windows Azure Platform Portal from a SQL Azure perspective. So that way you'll be able to have much more portal management capabilities. We're trying really hard to get to a point, you know, where you will never have to go ahead and install a piece of software on your computer again. It'll all be browser-based. Scale on demand. This is some interesting stuff we're working on here. We get lots of feedback from people saying, you know, 50 gigabyte database is not big enough. So from a scale out perspective, we're working on something called SQL Azure Federations, which will you know enable a sharding pattern inside the platform and do a lot of the heavy lifting associated with scaling out databases automatically for you. Additionally, if you don't want the added overhead of having to worry about federations, we're also looking at providing you know larger database sizes as well. Not only larger, but also smaller ones as you know as well. People come back to us and say, I only need to store you know 20 meg. Why do I have to pay for a 1 gigabyte database? So that's something we're working on as well. Another thing that we got a lot of feedback on is, you know, how can I be guaranteed a certain level of performance in my database? So we're working on things like the ability to reserve, you know, your compute cycles that'll be dedicated exclusively to your database. Additionally, we're also working on some additional multi-tenancy support and some programmatic ways of creating SQL Azure servers and databases from a web standard using RESTful protocols instead of having to worry about, you know, connecting to the database and doing T-SQL. From underneath the faster innovation area, we're continuing down the road with reporting as a service. So we have the CTP out now. There will be another CTP coming. I wouldn't say relatively soon, but pretty soon. We talked about the Sync Framework service. That's going to be coming out in another CTP. And we're also working on some rich developer experience. You know, this new tool for developing SQL Azure databases and SQL Server databases called Juno. You know, a lot of feedback we get from people is, you know, how, if I'm developing this database, how do I know if it's compatible with SQL Azure? Because as you know, there's certain T-SQL constructs that are not supported in SQL Azure. Project Juno gives you the ability to set a target type of SQL Azure, hit F5, and it'll actually tell you, whether or not this database is compatible with it as well. We have LightSwitch, which is a phenomenal tool for creating forms over data applications, as well as we just came out with a supported JDBC driver and some internationalization stuff. As well, from a data market perspective, we're doing, the international rollout and some additional ways to additional data sets and additional ways to go ahead and consume your data. So we're down to 9 minutes, so just let's recap really quick and then we'll do some Q&A. SQL Azure, highly available, relational database as a service. We showed this really cool cloud data demo. That cloud data demo will be available for you to download. There'll also be a hosted version of it for you to go ahead and walk up to and play with. And we're hoping to have that, both the one you can play with and the download, available to you sometime in May. MVC3, super easy and powerful. Data everywhere with OData. You know, get your data on any device, on any platform. And from geo-available web applications, there's really no coding required. It's just a configuration from both a data sync perspective and a traffic manager perspective. We have some related sessions. Most of them have already happened. There is, however, an OData roadmap session later on today, as well as a Windows Azure Data Market session. We have some additional session resources that you can download the deck, links to the website and to the blog, some tutorials, as well as a way for you to get a free trial of SQL Azure. And then that's about it. So let's, if anybody has any questions, now would be the time. Good. Microphone's not working. Okay. Better.
Can you? Okay. It's really short. Four questions. Really short.
Four short questions.
Yes.
Better than four long ones.
The zip code is a Microsoft service.
Is SQL Azure a Microsoft service?
No. The zip code. What you showed us to translate.
So the zip code. The zip code data is available as a data source inside Data Market.
And it's free.
That is not free. That is, Data Market is a consumption based. Service, just as the rest of the Azure platform is.
And you have geolocation information there?
We do.
Okay. Can we write custom synchronization methods to sync SQL Azure?
Can you write custom synchronization methods? Using the Sync Framework, yes. Using the Data Sync service, no. So in the Sync Framework gives you the ability to, basically roll your own synchronization to meet whatever your business goals are. The data sync service was more of a way of, really taking all the heavy lifting away from you. But today it only supports SQL Server and SQL Azure. So if you want to go ahead and synchronize to another data source, then yes, you could use the sync framework and do that yourself.
Last one.
Sure.
You're killing DataDude,
Are we killing DataDude?
Yes.
You can think of Project Juno as the evolution of DataDude. Where we make investments and in what tools we make investments, we always have to go ahead and evolve them. So don't think about it's killed. Think about, Juno as being the next version of the evolution of DataDude. Any other questions? Step up to the microphone. Come into the center stage.
You mentioned moving your connection strings into the config file.
Yes.
Is there an easy way to do that, or is...
There's actually, if you go to the SQL Jira blog post, there's a blog post on how you can do that, and also how you can encrypt your connection string, because you know your connection string has your password in it. So go out to blogs.msdn.com/SQL Azure, and there's a post on how to do that. Yes.
And do you have any plans for supporting
Profiler? Do we have any plans for supporting Profiler? So we have plans for a Profiler-like feature. It's based upon X events, and the way it probably will shake out is that you'll be able to go and walk up to the service and say, turn on tracing for some period of time, and then be able to get back that trace file. Profiler is a very resource-intensive thing that we have to limit the amount of resources somebody can consume. So that's the way that will work. But yes, something we're working on. Oh, you're welcome. Any other questions? Going once, going twice. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.